It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Aaron Newcomb joins Jeff and Gina. Apple loses in court. Google kills Latitude. And a new Maps is here. It's all next on This Week in Google.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 206, recorded July 10th, 2013. Cronuts and Rich Toast. This Week in Google brought to you by Hover.com. Hover is reliable domain name registration and management that's simple, honest, and easy to use. For exceptional customer support and 10% off your new domain name, go to hover.com/twig and enter the offer code TWIG. And by 99 Designs, the world's largest online graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of over 200,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/twig to receive a free design consultation. That's 99designs.com/twig. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 26 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off on your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code TWIG7. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show that covers the Googleverse, the cloud, really anything our esteemed panelists want to talk about. Because when you get people like Jeff Jarvis and Gina Trapani and Aaron Newcomb on a show, you just let them go. That's who's our
magic
our
happens.
Today. Magic, the magic happens. Gina Trapani, founding editor of Life Hacker. She's a smarterware.org. And what's the name of your podcast at 5x5.tv?
Hello. It's called In Beta.
In beta.
It's on Wednesday mornings. Yep. Check it out.
Gina is not in beta. She is full release.
Oh, no. I'm like pre-alpha. You know, I got a lot of work to do.
Oh, do I know that feeling. Also with us, Mr. Jeff Jarvis. Hey, we're glad to have you. We thought you'd be on a plane, but I guess you came home early.
I just came home one time, which Newark is amazing. But
congratulations.
Thank you. Yes, I was in. I went to Brussels. I went to Rome for a day, then back to Brussels, then London, and now I'm here.
Wow. And you saw Vint Cerf speaking in Rome, it looked like?
I saw him speaking in Rome, and then I interviewed him in London at the Guardian Activate, which was a ball. I can't wait for the video to be up, and I'll send it to you all. It was just great.
It'll be on the Guardian?
It's amazing. Yeah.
He is the sweetest guy. I love Vint Cerf.
I'll give you the punchline of the whole thing. So we talked about lots of fascinating things, the NSA, security.
I'd love to hear what he thinks about NSA.
Oh yeah, well we can talk about that in a second. Yeah, but the punchline was at the end. I said, "Oh, and Vint just moved 2 weeks ago to London." And I said, "You know, I figured he would just." I said, "Vint, why London?" Figuring he would just heap praise on the audience. He said, "Have you heard of Downton Abbey?" He said, "My wife has Downton Abbeyitis, and we had to visit every darn huge house there is, and
nice?
Now we're living in London for 6 months."
Isn't that neat? He's very devoted to his wife, by the way. It's really sweet, the two of them. And she's deaf, but had a cochlear implant. And or was it him? No, it was her, I think.
He's also hard of hearing.
He's very hard of hearing.
And there was a moment, I like to go out when I do events and I play Oprah and go in, or Phil, depending upon your metaphor. And I go into the room with the microphone and I keep conversation going and so on and so forth. And when I went out, Vint very nicely said, "I could have a problem with this. I may need you up here, Jeff, to help me with the questions."
Right.
And so I ran back up, and so then somebody said something, "Well, I'll speak louder." And he said, no, that's not the problem. He said, "Jeff speaks American."
More specifically, East Coast. More specifically, New York.
Right. Bit was just charming as could be at both Rome and London. He's just the greatest.
That's neat.
What a thrill and honor to be able to talk to Vint Cerf and someone who has changed the world this much.
I think it's not improper to call him the father. He would demur, but it's not improper to call him the father of the internet.
Not at all. His joke, and I'm sure it's a standard joke he uses often and has for years. He said the question is, who's the mother?
Yeah. he has been using that for years. I will vouch for that.
Yeah. He also said that his son was basically born the same year as the net.
Wow.
And so his son used to ask him, "Dad, is the internet my brother?"
Wow. If you're the father. And, of course, Aaron Newcomb's here from NetApp.
Yeah, now, good to be here.
But you've been on every show. You were on All About Android last night.
Yes, All About Android last night. So I just, you know, pulled up the cot and then got
regular
up this morning.
Regular and Floss. It's good to have you.
Yeah, they didn't have to move the cameras or anything. It was all dialed
were
in.
Were you on Floss this morning?
No, Floss was on hiatus, I think, this morning.
Little break.
Yeah, it was on last week, though. Okay. So, yep.
Well, lots to talk about. We're going to get our change log in just a bit. I hardly know where to begin. There's so much going on. Somebody in the chat room said, what? I just got an email. Google's killing Latitude.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. I actually, I and a few others used it.
There is a story in the rundown toward the end of the Google part. I put it in there.
Okay.
August 9.
August 9. So we've got 1 month. Latitude, for those who don't know, was kind of Google's Foursquare, right?
Right. Yep.
Very patriotic, by the way. Thank you, Chad, for that transition. Left over from the 4th of July, apparently. How are they going to do this, Google Plus location sharing? Because right now, when I travel around, Latitude automatically follows me, keeps track of it, checks me in to places that I enter that I've given it permission to do so automatically. And publishes it to the public. I keep it public. You have a choice, obviously, but publishes it to my Google Plus page. What happens now? What's the new thing?
I understand that the new thing is just location in Google Plus. You can add location to your Google Plus.
But it's manual?
Plus posts. I guess it will be manual. I forgot about that automatic checking in. That is crazy, Leo. You may have been the only person who had that enabled.
Go on, stalk me. See if I care.
Crazy automatically check me in. You got nothing to hide. I like that.
I just think it's cool.
I don't think that automatic feature is going to happen, but they're just moving into. I mean, so Google, it's not like Google doesn't have location app anymore. It's just all going to be Google Plus. I would be surprised if at some point they set it up so that at Google Plus, you know, maybe can you imagine Google Now popping up and being like, hey, it looks like you're at your favorite tea shop. Want to check in? Yes. You know? But that obviously doesn't do that now.
This is just another effort on Google's part of trying to draw people into Google Plus, though, right? Because on Latitude, I could share. I had it like with my family could see where I was. I wasn't as brave as Leo, but my family could see where I was.
Right.
And it didn't matter what email system they were on or what, you know, they just had to be a Latitude user signed up for that service, and they could see where I was, and I could see where they were, whatever. Now, I think the difference is going to be you have to go to Google Plus or interface with Google Plus. And so it's drawing the eyeballs towards Google Plus that they're after. And I think that's smart on their – some people might not like it, but I think it's smart on their part. It's more
– I hope
Google
we get,
Plus is everywhere.
Well, and it's probably also – see, this is the point. They know this information, but they don't want to let everybody know they know, right?
Right.
So look – and this is very useful. This is my Latitude location history. Notice it doesn't say Latitude, so maybe they'll still offer this. This is in your dashboard. This is not public. But how much time I spent at work, that's the green part. How much time at home, that's the yellow part. Time spent out, that's the blue part. Places I went, times I spent at my house, 133 hours last week, 39 hours a week on average. I have traveled 128,000 miles. This stuff is great. I mean, I think
this is great data. That's great
data.
You know,
you're a data nerd.
I tell you, when you showed that to us, I actually considered turning on Latitude, and I decided not to.
You shouldn't. Because you're a woman.
Yeah.
Seriously, I hate to say that, but don't you think that's true, that's the risk?
Well, can't you turn it on just for yourself? I mean, couldn't you just turn it on just for yourself?
I guess.
So you got the data, you just didn't share.
So it just keeps track of it.
Right, without sharing it, yeah.
Well, what do you get when you go to your location history dashboard? Do you get this? You don't get this stuff.
Where is that?
It's in the dashboard, google.com/dashboard, and then scroll down to location history. So I'm playing back a video of my location over the last 30 days. It's actually going to show me going around. It even shows me going to Colorado with my son. I mean, it's pretty cool. You can export this to KML. It's going to show the timestamps.
Well, are we misinterpreting this? Is this a case like Reader where Google just says people, they're cool, but people weren't using it? Or?
Well, Well, it's interesting that this wasn't a spring cleaning post, right? I mean, normally the way that Google shuts things down is they do a spring cleaning post, and then there's a list of products you've never heard of or you forgot about that are getting shut down. This Latitude announcement came in the Google Maps update announcement because they removed the ability to check into Latitude from the Maps mobile app, which is new, which I'll talk about in the changelog.
Right.
So it was kind of like, hey, we've got this whole new Maps thing. Oh, by the way, that old feature, that's not there anymore because we're sunsetting Latitude and you can just check in on Google Plus. From here on in. So it was a weird, they didn't make any comment about how there just weren't enough people using Latitude. But let's be honest, how many people do you know? I mean, Leo is the only person I knew who
And used Aaron, Latitude. Aaron's looking at his dashboard, and you have to opt in. You have to manually enable location
right.
settings.
Right, so there is location settings in Google Plus, in your Google Plus settings. If you click on that little home thing and then go down to settings, which is always confusing to me because I'm used to the Google settings being on the upper right-hand side. Once you find that, you can scroll all the way down and you'll see location settings. So you can enable location sharing and you can enable it only for certain circles. Including just you. So you can enable it for only you. You can enable it for public. You can enable it for certain circles. It's the whole Google Plus, you know, selection thing like you would normally see on a post. So that is in there. I don't know how long it's been there. Maybe it's always been there, but I just saw it today.
I think it's always been there because I remember turning it on. I like it. I having that all that information.
I turned this on for a trip to New York, so I actually do have data here. But then I guess I turned it off when I got back home to San Diego. Because honestly, I work at home, so I really don't go. don't go a whole lot of places.
Most of mine's not that interesting. No, that's right.
It's not that interesting. It's just like here's where I am.
Well, I think it's interesting though to see how much you go out. Maybe you should go out more.
Yeah, that's true. You know? I actually had Google Now ask me if I worked at the coffee shop because like that's the one place
do you
I go.
Work here? Why do you keep going
work?
There?
Is this work? Is this as work?
That's really funny.
Because I'm normally just home otherwise.
Now this is tied into, and maybe this is the reason, a new Google Maps app for Android phones and tablets coming soon to iPad and iPhone.
Yep.
And you guys are just downloading it now. Well, by the way, there's Jeff. We got him back, so we had a little trouble with Jeff. So I haven't played with it at all. I don't have it yet.
Yeah, I got it yesterday.
So what's new? This is Jason's...
There's a lot of new features in here. For one, it looks a lot more... If you've been using the Google Maps preview for in Chrome or for your desktop, then you'll recognize... It looks a lot similar to that interface.
Very clean interface.
Very clean.
Right now.
Some of the things that they finally...
Ooh, I like this.
Yeah. So one of the things is you can see it has a lot better integration with places and what's near you and what's around you.
Yeah.
They enabled cards for what's around you. So apparently if you touch on the map... And then you should be able to get a choice of like what's there or what's around your location, and you can actually pull up cards. There's some pretty good video of it on the link in the rundown.
It is a very different UI, and they've gone to this new. I think this is a new UI you're seeing a lot on mobile.
Mm-hmm.
This tab that slides over. Facebook was the first place I saw, but a lot of apps are starting to use this.
Yep.
Instead of the overflow menu that we used to see a lot in Android, there's a little, you know, kind of tab in the lower left-hand corner that opens up a sidebar with a lot of other things, traffic, public transit, bicycling, satellite.
That's a new Android UI element. It's called Navigation Drawer. Yeah,
I like actually, it.
I just added it to to-do text. And in fact, like for apps that have an action bar across the top, which Maps does not, you'll see the hamburger icon, the three dashes.
Is that what that's called?
The hamburger, right, because it's the two buns and the meat. In Gmail, you see that in Gmail. Like if you launch Gmail, you see the little hamburger, and you can tap on it and expand the navigation drawer. But I agree. I really love the navigation drawer. And what's nice about the nav drawer, too, is that when you go – landscape or you're on a tablet, often it can auto expand, which we also just put in to-do text.
Right.
Anyway, sorry, didn't mean to hijack. Motif.
No, I'm glad. No, that's why we love having a developer on here to explain why this appears in some apps and not in all. So this is something that Google's probably
pushing. It's a fairly modern new UI, but it is a part of the standard Android UI elements now. So you'll see it more and more.
Yeah. They've also added
the motif is certainly what Glass and all that is going to use a lot. So.
Right.
You see there they've actually expanded the public transit or the transportation mode offerings. You're not seeing it right there, but they're in certain screens, like when you do navigation or directions, it'll offer you a choice. and it'll say, I want to minimize my time to like minimize the amount of walking I have to do.
So I can have.
They've always had, for a long time, they've had public transit or driving.
Boy, when I was in Europe, it was just the greatest thing to be able to use the public transit.
Yeah, and so they've expanded that that ability to really drill down on exactly what type of transportation modes you want to do. The other thing they've added is more detailed traffic information and the ability to reroute around traffic. I think they mentioned that at Google I.O.
Oh, interesting.
So they've added that. You can see it on the video
Waze,
that Chad has.
Waze style.
Waze style,
we thought
exactly.
They might kill Latitude once they acquired Waze, but this is well before that, and this map update is well before that. Apparently Places has been updated as well. And
it will alert you real time while you're driving if there's been an accident or an event and reroute you.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And it'll tell you how much longer it is or, you know, there's a new route. Do you want to take it? Yeah, it's really, really nice. And I really think Waze was a defensive buy for them, right? Because they've had to have this ability in the works for a while. So they bought Waze because they didn't want anybody else to buy it.
Well, but Aaron, it's not just the defense. I think that Waze does have a critical mass of reporting users.
Yes. Yes. That too. Yep. Absolutely.
Cool. I don't want to scoop the change log, but
no, that's okay. That was a big release.
It's well, huge.
I'm glad we demoed.
You do it to me all the time.
I know. It's time we did. Okay, this is probably also in the change log, but I've been holding off on putting Hangouts in my Gmail because I still use Gmail to make phone calls. Mm-hmm. Finally, they've put phone calls into Gmail. They put phone calls into Hangouts, and now I can use it in my Gmail. And I like the interface better. And they even said very specifically, this is a step in replacing voice with Google Voice with Hangouts. So I got to think another service that is on the block is Google Voice, and now I'm afraid.
Right.
Because I use that.
I'm just hoping that all of Google Voice's functionality will get ported over in Hangouts, and it just means that there'll be the same product integrated with other Hangout stuff and under the same name. That's what I'm hoping for. Because voice is my primary number. Because like you, Leo, you know, I've got a bunch of phones, I got a bunch of test devices, and I just like that, you know, whatever phone I have rings, right? Because everybody has that one Google Voice number.
Yep.
You know, voice still has its problem, doesn't support things like MMS, and that's something that Hangouts is really good at. I have to say, I'm totally Hangouts at this point. I installed the Chrome extension, I have it on my phones, my co-founder and I use Hangouts, Kevin and I use Hangouts, I love it. Because
can I use Hangouts on my phone to make
announcement.
To make calls? Is it in there now?
I don't think it is.
It's just desktop. Desktop right now.
Just desktop users. So you can do it from Gmail, or they said you could also do it from HTML. I'm not sure exactly what that means.
WebRTC?
From HTML.
Yeah.
WebRTC, is that
not,
no?
But they did not say Android, iPhone, or mobile in the announcement.
Yeah, and I don't see it.
Oh, well. And it's got a couple of different features. Now I'm totally scooping the changelog, but I don't care. You can do
play the changelog theme, and then we'll just make this the changelog.
Then we're okay.
The Google changelog.
Okay.
All right.
Now we're safe.
Anything goes.
Now we're officially in the changelog. I haven't had a chance to try this yet, but this new calling from Hangouts on the desktop, you can add, let's see, where did I see this?
You can have multiple calls.
Multiple phone numbers, video participants in the same call. You can play sound effects like applause or laughter.
Is that, I saw Google. That. I don't know if that's an improvement. I'm a little nervous about that.
Kind of funny, especially if it's a conference call situation or, you know, if you're working, you know. And so to make call from Hangouts, you look for the new phone icon in Gmail. I haven't seen it to show up for me because I'm normally in my app's Gmail. Or from the new call a phone menu item in Google Plus and the Chrome extension. The Chrome extension actually made my Hangouts experience way, way better. So I highly recommend that if you're using Hangouts. So this is good. Free calls within the U.S. and international rates are pretty low.
Question. Young people, of whom I know a few, don't make phone calls.
Right.
Right, period. Are they using video conferencing a lot? And then what does the phone motif do to that for them, I wonder?
So my totally subjective observation is that the youngins really like video conferencing. I sort of missed it. I'm actually too old. I'm in the space where I hate making phone calls, but I also don't love video calls either. But I think one of the more interesting things about Hangouts and Google, the Googlers we talked about, Vic and other Googlers we talked to, said, you know, that the young people, particularly at Google, were on Hangouts all night, kind of just, you know, messing around and joking around, and would just sort of leave it on all the time while they were working and like and talk to their friends. I have also heard that other younger people do that same thing. I don't, but I can see that that's, you know, how that's sort of interesting. I think that Hangouts has a very has a lot of use from a certain demographic, and I do think it's the
younger people. It seems completely reasonable. I know my kids were on IM all the time.
Right?
Why not have?
Why
video
feel the
on?
Need to bring phone calls in?
Right.
That's what I'm just. What I'm trying to. I don't know.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Well, for
right.
For us people over 20.
If you want to call someone over 25.
When your friends are out camping and they don't have an internet connection. And that's literally happened to me a few times.
God, how do they survive? I don't.
I think the real story here is ubiquity, right? I mean, did you guys cover the fact that you can, from Google Voice, you can call into Hangouts now?
No.
Like if you have Hangouts running, you can actually set an option in Google Voice, say use, you know, call my phone first and then call Hangouts. And I've actually taken a few out, you know, inbound calls from outside on telephone systems in Hangouts, and it's worked brilliantly. People can hear me. They don't know that I'm on talking through a webcam speaker. I mean, maybe they do, and they're just too polite to say anything. But I've taken a few calls like that, and it works really well.
Boy, does this sound like the death of voice. This is the death of voice then.
So wait, this is in your Google Voice settings?
Yeah.
There's an option to say send this to. So I'm looking forward calls to. So I can forward calls to my cell phones. There's a forward calls to Google Chat. I don't see the Hangouts.
Maybe it's Google Chat and it just came in over Hangouts because I'm using Hangouts in Gmail.
Because you're using Hangouts now. That must be it. So if you forward a call to Google Chat, interesting. Yeah, I really hope that they don't kill Google Voice, or that there isn't a time when Google Voice doesn't have its full functionality while they port it over to Hangouts. But it seems pretty clear that Hangouts is going to be it from here on in. Just as long as it supports old school text messaging. And MMS would also be really nice, all integrated into Hangouts. I might actually forgive them for the whole.
And it needs a phone number. That's what you want.
And that's the main thing we want to keep is that those
that's
numbers.
The main
yeah.
thing. Right. That single number. Yep.
It has to compete with Skype, doesn't it?
Yeah. Skype gives. Skype you have to pay for a number, but yes.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But I think Google can't go without phone numbers. Well, I don't think.
Are they trying to compete with Skype? What are they doing? This is Babbel, right? This is their unified messaging platform slowly emerging.
Yes, yep. We thought it would be a kind of all at one time.
With the phone system. That's the issue. It needs to be interoperable with the phone system, both in terms of calls and text.
You know, here's the problem with voice right now. Voice is weird because if you use voice on your phone, it calls you, right?
Right.
And so it's not VoIP. It's a phone call, but using Google's servers.
If you call out, if you have Google Voice on your phone and you call out, Google Voice dials the number for you. It doesn't call you back.
It
used to call you back before there was an app. But now it's a setting in the app, and it'll actually place the call for you.
So they can now turn it into a true VoIP solution and eliminate that weird callback thing.
But they're using a landline number to call a server that then translates. Like, if you look at the way it works, it like they assign weird numbers to your friends that are somewhere in Nevada or something. For a while there, this is all sort of black box now. You don't see it in the new app. But in the beginning, when it was Grand Central and kind of early when Google had it, there was all sorts of weirdness about calling out and calling you back. But now it's a pretty seamless experience.
So
for the user.
Aaron's making the call right now. Did it?
Yeah.
But what phone number was that call coming into your recipient from? Your phone number?
It's supposed to.
Your Google Voice number?
Yeah, it's supposed to do some tricky caller ID settings so that it comes in through your number.
As long as it looks like your number, then
it usually does. But I noticed that sometimes, depending on where it calls out from, like Gina was saying, sometimes you get a weird Nevada number or you get a weird, some weird number comes up.
Well, I still get that when people, I use Google Voice for text messaging, and I always, it's weird numbers. The text messages are coming from some strange number.
Yeah, that's true,
number.
Too. Yep.
That's not good. I mean, my mom, she's not at 313.
Right.
But this conversation we're having is with a 313 number. So that's all got to get out of the way. That's like HTTPS /// We don't need to know the details.
Exactly.
It should look like VoIP, even if it's not VoIP.
It should. I've definitely had a few of the like, no, wait, really, what is your real number? Like yeah. conversation with my family yeah. a couple of times.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's like, too. No, this is my real number. It's a little bit of a weird number, but it works. Yeah. So they just need to make that totally seamless. And I hope that all of that gets into Hangouts, you know, plus some. It doesn't look like there's not a lot of movement on voice. Even if you look at the Android app for voice, it's kind of,
yeah, they're sitting
it's looking
on it.
A little aged. It's looking old. They're not working on that. My optimistic self is thinking that there's a whole team of little hamster engineers at Google making it work perfectly with Hangouts right now. That's what I'm hoping. So I should finish up the changelog.
Yes.
What else do we have? Chrome 28 comes with rich notifications for apps and extensions. This is only on Windows. I haven't had a chance to see it yet. It's coming from Mac and Linux soon. Chrome 28 also has Blink. This is the first release of Chrome that has Blink, which, if you remember, is Google's fork of WebKit, the super fast fork of WebKit. And you can check the Blink ID yourself. You go to Chrome /version, and it'll show you that Blink is there in your Gina, installation.
Is Chrome yes. OS 28 the same as Chrome in terms of the feature set? Beta on Chromebook is 28 now.
Beta on Chromebook, right? But this is Windows only has the rich notifications in Blink. So I think that let's see. NextWeb is saying Mac and Linux coming soon. Didn't say anything about the Chromebook. So you're not seeing Blink in your Chrome version there?
I haven't looked yet.
Okay. Where would I look? Okay. I'm not sure why they released this for Windows first, but you can see on the NextWeb link, they have a couple of nice screenshots of what the rich toast looks like. Looks like a Google.
What's rich? What's rich toast? Toast?
Well, you know when you call a notification on Windows toast? You know the toaster? Come on. Like the notification comes out like a slice of toast.
What does rich toast look like?
And
is there chocolate? There, Nutella?
There are Vegemite? Buttons on it where you can interact with it. Come on.
Come on. Get with the program.
Rich toast and hamburgers.
I'm waiting for the scone interface.
So toast is toast. Notifications.
Yeah, the toast is like the notification that pops up out of your status bar, like a slice of toast. And that goes back to early days of Microsoft. So I called it a rich toast because it's the toast, it's the slice of bread that kind of pops up. But then
you're coining that, I think you should call it buttered toast.
Butter toast. No. This is not
buttered rich toast. I like
this
it.
This is what happens when a developer learns too many UX terms. It just starts rolling them around, name dropping UX. You've got hamburgers and rich toast. Well,
you know, the word Chrome itself is a UI term, a UX
it
term.
Is.
It was what the Firefox folks called the user interface on top of the Gecko engine was the Chrome.
It was just Chrome.
And Google picked that up as the name of their browser.
Someone in the chat room says you should call it Cronut, of course.
A Cronut. That's a New York thing.
What's
I gotta
a Cronut?
To try one of those.
Oh, you don't know this one, Leo?
This is a New York centric thing, Jeff. Explain.
Oh, there is one bakery that does this very special thing. It uses croissant dough to make a donut with some kind of creamy thing.
Oh my God!
They can only make so many a day. So there's a long line. You can only get two at a time. It's like the soup Nazi. Wow. And then when you leave, what do you do with tickets?
Oh, that looks so good.
You can sell them for like $40 each.
You can scalp a cronut?
Yes.
Cronut scalping is the shame of the New York City.
This should have been my tip. Google image search cronut.
That's called the man repeller. I don't know why.
There's the line. It starts like 5 in the morning.
Is this one place?
One place.
Dominic's Ansel Bakery.
So have you had one, Jeff? Is it worth the line?
Oh, look at the cinnamon.
Oh, I have no idea.
God.
Are you a donut guy? You're a croissant guy or a donut guy?
Don't tell my wife or my or my cardiologist.
Wait, absolutely. Fair enough.
Oh, that looks good.
These look
when
amazing.
I was in Paris, I had to have a croissant. Yeah, but I normally don't.
So New York invented the cupcake craze. Is the cronut next?
Yes, but evidently it's so special now. But I don't know why haven't others done this? Is there a patent involved? Is there, I don't know.
It's probably very tricky.
It's very, very tricky. Evidently it's extremely tricky.
How tricky could it be? You just dip the
I'm following Dominic Ansel on Twitter because apparently he's tweeting about cronuts. He says, one woman legitimately cried. We felt so bad. We looked everywhere to find her, the last remaining cronut. Holy.
This is where we drive our audience nuts, I know. From Chipotle to cronuts.
From Chrome 28 Rich Toast to cronuts, people.
Come on, you
don't get this anywhere else.
This has got to be in San Francisco somewhere.
Why do we not have cronuts?
Hey, what is that? What? We've got to be in San Francisco. No, this is the center of the universe, fella.
Not anymore. That's
you live
Manhattan.
In a boutique. This is a city.
That's true. He's right. Sorry, Leo. That's right.
I prefer my sleepy little fishing village, but if it doesn't get cronuts soon, I might have to move.
Sleepy little fishing village.
It is a sleepy little fishing village.
It is. Okay, I'm going to get to the changelog. Let's keep going. we talked about the new Google Maps app. Thank you, Aaron, for doing that excellent demo. That is rolling out of the Play Store over the next few days. I got it on my phone, so you should be getting it as well. And then last bit of change in Google Plus. This is kind of interesting, and I found myself wishing that Twitter would do it. Google Plus is now going to start showing you posts that your friends have plus one'd. So we'll occasionally highlight posts that were plus one by people in your circles. And if you plus one a post, Google writes, we may highlight it to your friends as well. There's lots of settings. You can visit your settings, and you can turn on the volume.
This is mind-blowing. Because this was always our puzzle, was why plus one something if no one sees it?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And for 2 years, that's been the default behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I still plus one things. But then I kind of realized, well, that was pointless. Nobody's going to notice.
If you plus one in the forest and nobody's there, does it?
Well, the original post author sees it, right? Like, so I plus one is a way to say thank you, acknowledged,
right?
You know, as a thumbs up. So as a pat on the back, not a boy or not a girl. But this is nice. I really like this. I wish the Twitter would show me, posts that maybe I want to see posts. Maybe I don't want to see all of my friends' retweets, but I want to see the posts that three or four of my friends have retweeted.
Yeah, you're right, Gina. And my plus one reflex is now established enough that I often start to want to plus one a tweet, and of course I can't.
Well, but do you favor it?
No, because favoriting is different to me. Favoriting it means that I'm saving it.
Ah, okay. Interesting. I think that people do, it's like consider favorites as read it later. I kind of look at favorites as a kind of attaboy, attagirl as well.
I see it's odd. Like. I think, why would somebody save that? Okay, I got it.
No, it's them just saying, hey, because the mobile app will say, hey, if you favorite one of my tweets, and because we're friends, on the mobile app, I'll get a notification that says Jeff Jarvis favorited your tweet, and it gives me a warm and fuzzy. So it's kind of a nice way to say, like, hey, nice, nice job. Although you can also use it as read it later.
But now not all will be seen, just select. This is like what Facebook does with the selective news feed. Right. How is their algorithm published? Do we know how this works?
We don't, but you can turn down the volume. You can go into your settings. If you're seeing too many posts that you don't want to see, you can say, don't show me highlighted plus ones. You can go in and say, don't highlight the things that I plus one to my friends. You have a lot of control here, which is really, really nice.
And where would that in the home, obviously in the Google Plus settings?
Yeah, in Google Plus settings. I'm looking at that post.
Who can interact? Who can send you notifications? Who can comment? Who can hang out? Notification delivery. Wow, there's just so many checks here.
See all the content you've created.
Google Plus One. Plus One on non-Google sites, no. Google Plus Pages. Automatically add a Google Plus page to my circles.
This is the absurdity of what
this is ridiculous.
This is about controlling your own data. You get a settings panel that is like it's completely insane.
Now viewers, upload my
photo. It's just a friggin' plus one.
Profile. Here we go. Show your... No.
I don't really see it either. It might not have been rolled out to everybody.
Roll out yet. Yeah, it's possible it didn't.
Oh,
roll out.
Now after I go through 100 pages of settings.
Leo.
I did get a little pop up though this morning when I was on Google Plus and I hovered over the plus. It popped up and told me, basically what you just read, Gina, about how it's going to work. It said, mm-hmm. okay, this may be shared to your friends' extended circles. If enough people like it, they'll get a little notification. I kind of like it and I kind of don't because. I've kind of got my Google Plus like locked down the way I want to see it. And I don't like things flying at me that I didn't explicitly say I wanted to see. So like when Communities first came out, I was like, they were, you know, I say spamming, I guess to other people it was helpful, but you know, they were putting a lot of posts in my, mm-hmm. In my timeline that I didn't want to see. And so luckily finally they came back and corrected that. So I hope this doesn't add a lot of things,
Aaron,
that I would consider spam.
They've been really good. Aaron, I think that every time they've added something, I mean, think of the earliest days of Google Plus, the Scoble days.
Oh,
we got overloaded, people updating, and we all complained about it, and then you know they fixed it, and we kind of forgot that we were complaining.
Yeah.
Same with the Communities things, and every time they've introduced something new, it tends to have a little bit of an overdose period, and then they find the right level. They're good at that,
and then
you just forget the pain.
Yep. Unlike Facebook and other sites.
Yes.
Yep. I agree. That's why I like Google Plus.
Mm-hmm. I love Google Plus more and more. I mean, I think Communities, they have the photos in the Communities put me over the top. Now it's just where I want to live. Yeah. Photos, amazing.
Yep.
I'm going nuts with photos, and I went nuts on this trip. My favorite auto awesome I've done yet was a fish and chips flickering neon sign.
Oh, cool. Now tell us how
very,
you did
cool.
that, Jeff. You consciously did that by doing a burst?
I just turned the camera to shoot the mini.
Okay.
And then uploaded them, and I made it. That's it. If you look at my feed, you should
I'm sorry, I got stuck on you wearing the newspaper hat. Come on, Andy. He won.
My caption for that, for those who can't see, the Sun newspaper in London did a hat you could make for Andy Murray, and a sun hat, and I said finally there was a good reason to publish the Sun.
Here's it. Oh, this is a great auto awesome. I really like this. That is really neat. Because it doesn't look like an animated picture.
Right.
It's just the sign going off and on.
There's also, I did two of them. There's that one and there's a bigger one. There's that one too, right?
Oh, I love this. Okay, so say how you did that again.
Just simple. My camera, my Nikon One, you just turn it from single shot to multiple shots, right?
The burst mode.
Whatever you call that.
Okay.
And hit it down. Just try to hold as still as I can. Hit it down. And then when I upload all the photos into Google Plus, wait about 2-3 minutes, and then you'll see that it'll catch it. And do it. I did one too for a flag waving atop the Union Jack waving atop Parliament. So I like those. Now I'm playing with those where I can take something where everything is static, but there is one thing moving.
Yeah,
in.
Yeah, love that.
And you auto awesome around that.
And you know, most camera phones I think have a burst mode.
Mm-hmm.
So presumably you could also do that with your camera phone.
Mm-hmm.
I have not been able to do it on my camera. My Nexus 4 doesn't seem to have a burst mode. So, unless I'm wrong. Maybe it does.
There's an app that actually Jason featured on All About Android a few weeks ago called Fast Burst Camera that does a really nice job. Takes a ton of pictures really, really fast.
But the problem with it is that even though I have this huge, humongous amount of storage now, I'll stick the – and I am using this. What I do now is I sign out of my Chromebook. I sign into my other account, my Google Plus account, put in the SD card in the Chromebook, and it all just goes up. Bing. It just syncs my photos completely.
Well, and that's why I like to do it on the camera phone, because I don't even have to do that step. But yeah, that's nice.
Yeah.
This way I can do fancier things with the camera.
Right.
And but the problem is suddenly I'm uploading 268 photos.
Right.
Yeah, I'm already using over a third of my storage, and I really don't even upload.
See,
that
you
much.
Need
I'm
a pixel. That. Wait a minute, you're using a third of a terabyte?
Oh, mine, it says 15 gig.
Oh, you didn't register your pixel.
Register your pixel.
That's what I got to do.
You got a terabyte. That's the best reason to get
that
pixel.
The best part. Okay. I got to get on that. I was like, 15 gig.
There's other reasons, Leo.
Oh, I'm sure there are. I wouldn't know that, but I do know that one. But I had already bought a lot of storage because I think this is great. I want. Mm-hmm. I mean,
it's
I never
the
have.
It's thing there is.
It's, I love the backup.
It's getting me into photography in a way that I never have been. So now I'm using all the time three things. Right, I'm using my camera, phone, my camera, and also my glass. You know,
yeah.
I took a picture of Vint Cerf with Google Glass in Rome. You know, what more perfect could you have?
Oh, you wore your glass in Rome. How nice.
In Rome, I was at a Google event, and. Nobody there had glass. So I said to the Google people, okay, if I wear it on stage, they said, yeah, whatever, we don't care. So I wore it on stage and did a little demo, and I did it again at Guardian Activate, and I hammed it up. I'm doing the, what's the word?
Peacock.
Peacock. They wouldn't have gotten it in Europe, but I'm doing that and screaming, you know, okay, glass! And it gets great laughs. It works well. And then I bring somebody on stage, and they get to try it on. It's a shtick.
Oh, that's a good shtick.
And then somebody in Activate, when Vint was on, Guardian Activate, somebody did the standard shtick about, well, everybody's following us in the NSA, and now with this Google Glass.
Oh,
and I said,
God.
Whoa. If you got nothing else out of my demo, what you should have gotten is that it is impossible to subtly take a picture with Google Glass. Okay, Glass. Take a picture. Right. Forget.
Hey, let's finish the change log. It's the world's longest. No, wait a minute. She had more. I didn't mean to play. Are you done?
That was it.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, play the timpanis.
Good to go.
Wait, we have to rewind the tape. Hold on.
Okay. Rewind the cart.
Cart is rewound. That was the Google changelog. That is Gina Trapani. Lots more news coming up in just a second. But first, a word from Hover.com. It is the best way to register domains, to manage your domains. They've made it simple. They've made it clean. There's not a lot of upsell. If you want to register a domain name, please do me a favor. Go to Hover.com/twig and check it out. It's clean. It's easy. They just announced something new. Add Google Apps for your business. So this was announced today, so I'm not completely up on this. But when you go to Hover.com and register a domain, you can also use that domain with Google Apps, and they'll make it very simple for you to do so. Integrates in. We do that here, you know, twit.tv, mail.twit.tv is a Google, you know, Gmail and all of that. So this is a really great new feature at Hover. If you've got domains registered with other registrars, you can transfer them to Hover very easily. They have a concierge transfer service. You'll pay $10 each, but you get an extra year on the domain. So you extend the domain another year over and above what you already have left on your domain. They will do the transfer for you. You get the great domain management tools. And as with everything at Hover, there is just no wait telephone support. If you'd call during regular business hours, which are very extensive, let me give you the business hours, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern time, Monday through Friday, you'll get a representative who is empowered to help you, is empowered to fix it. Because this is what Hover was created for, to do it right. Domain name registration done right. I want you to try it. I use Hover for all my domains now, and I'm so happy. They have great online help, support documentation, tutorials. They're part of Tucows, and I know you know Tucows. Have been around since 1994. We love them. They've gone into these businesses because they knew they needed to be reinvented, and Hover is just great. They have all the top-level domains, .com and everything. But I might note that they do offer you the .net address because so many of the .coms, almost all of them are gone. But they will always tell you what the .net is, and I think .net is not bad. I mean, Hover has all of the, you know, .tv, .pro, .mobi, .biz, .ca, .asia, .us, all of those. But I think .net is the one to take a look at. I think it's for a lot of people, it's just as popular and common as .com. It doesn't confuse them. I'll say twit.tv, and they say, you mean twit.tv.com? I say, no, twit.tv. You don't have that problem with .net so much. Hover.com/twig. You'll get 10% off when you use our offer code TWIG on your domain registrations. 10% off standard domain names when you use the offer code TWIGG. So go to hover.com/twig. Take a look. And now, I love this Google Apps integration. It makes it so much easier. $60 per user per year, $6 per user per month. You'll save 20%. And they have a 30-day free trial, so you can see what it's like to add it to your domain. You can use one you already know or you already own, or you could start fresh. Hover.com, thank you for your support of This Week in Google. Well, some exciting news from T-Mobile. They said they were going to really blow things out of the water. They have just announced that you can dump your smartphone twice a year.
Okay, split that. Okay, but you pay an extra fee?
You pay $10 a month, which is an insurance fee, and you can be part of JUMP, which stands for, what is it?
How high?
No, JUMP stands for Just Upgrade My Phone.
It should be Just Upgrade My Damned Phone.
Jibidump. You know, I think for most people, this is like, what? But for people who watch this show, for everybody at this table.
Oh, this is everything.
This is good.
This is awesome.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, this is awesome.
You can trade in your T-Mobile smartphone for a new device, subsidized after a six-month waiting period. They're trying to be the uncarrier, right? After the initial 6 months, the carrier will waive the rest of what is owed on the device. I guess you probably have to turn it in, right?
Well, it says you have to turn it to get started. You have to turn in your phone. I think that's what you do. I think that's probably how they make it back.
So it's kind of like rotating phones.
But what if you break your phone or something?
It's part of the insurance. So if the device is broken or has water damage, you're paying $10 insurance. There's a deductible, but in effect, you're also getting insurance. That's what most carriers charge just for the handset insurance anyway. So this is just, you know, kind of an additional feature. That's pretty good.
It's
good for T-Mobile. This is much needed.
This is why you want competition. You want a number four carrier.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Right? Because they try harder.
I wish. Definitely. I mean, I'm on a business plan, and so they only support the major three. They don't support T-Mobile, so I had to go with one of the – I went with AT&T. But if they had T-Mobile, this is exactly the reason I would have chosen T-Mobile right away if that was an option for me. And if I was not on a business plan, if I was on a personal plan, it would absolutely be either T-Mobile or one of the second-tier ones like Ting or Virgin Mobile.
So I'm now understanding this is part of the EIP program. So remember, T-Mobile eliminated subsidies, but they do have, which is basically a subsidy, an installment plan, right? Mm-hmm. They call that the equipment installment program or EIP. So you go to T-Mobile, you buy a phone using the EIP. 6 months later, you can say, okay, take this phone back. I want the Galaxy S5. They say, okay, you don't no longer have to pay the EIP for the old phone. We're going to start you on a new one, and you get the new phone, but you just have to bring there's no contract, right?
Contract.
The EIP is, I guess, kind of a contract because you owe them.
It's a charge.
Yeah. But there's no annual service contract. Very interesting. And my Galaxy S4 is a T-Mobile, and I have to say, you got to check to see if T-Mobile works in your neck of the woods, but here, T-Mobile's great because nobody uses it. So I'm using their HSPA Plus. They don't have LTE here, but it's the 42 megabit HSPA Plus, and I'm pretty typically getting 20 megabits down.
Yep. You can argue all you want. Some of the carriers will argue that they have a faster network, right? But that's in ideal conditions.
Right.
So like you're saying, I mean, if you're on T-Mobile and no one else, like if you go to a baseball game or if you go to, you know, any event, like I was at the fireworks for 4th of July, I couldn't get hardly any download because everybody around me also had AT&T service and the pipes were clogged. So you got a good point there. I mean, T-Mobile should have, in certain circumstances, better throughput, even if the other guy's network is faster under ideal conditions.
As long as they have, you know, a nearby tower, which apparently they do in Petaluma.
Now, if you bring a Nexus 4 or a phone like that you bought full price,
that's
elsewhere,
different.
That doesn't do anything for you than the plan.
Well, you're month to month then anyway, so there'd be no benefit to you. You can trade in anytime you want.
That's true.
You don't have to wait 6 months.
Nah. Speaking of which, Gina, have you gotten your phone?
Not yet. Friday.
Which one? The HTC One Google Experience, right?
Give us the update, Gina. We knew last night it was in Kansas City.
It was in Kansas City last night. I actually have been busy enough today that I don't know where it's located. I'm opening Slice right now to check to see where it's at. But yeah, Kansas City. It should be here on Friday. I'm very excited because my poor Galaxy Nexus is totally cracked. And I'm tired of people
like
saying, oh, your poor phone, whenever they see it.
So T-Mobile is adding a couple of phones July 17th using this plan, the Xperia Z, which is waterproof. It's that really thin Sony phone.
That's interesting because they also introduced the separate little tiny handsets.
Right, we were talking about that, yeah.
Right, so I think that's really an interesting path where they're going.
So the idea of the handset is you keep the phone in the pocket and you just go, hello, to this little thing. And that's your phone now. It's not exactly a Bluetooth headset because you're holding it, right?
Well, you know, you can also, it also has little ear things.
You can mount it.
You can use it as Bluetooth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Lumia 925, that's a nice, if you wanted Windows Phone, that would probably be the one to get. That will be available July 17th as well using this jump pricing.
The I also interviewed the CEO of Ericsson at Guardian Activate. All these videos, I hope, will be up in a week. And they're out of the device business. They sold that because they were in it with Sony. But he said a fascinating stat that I just I should use it for my number, but I won't. He said that for every $10 drop in the price of handsets, it adds 100 million users.
Mm. Wow.
Right?
That's the argument for the cheap iPhone. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And we also saw, you know, I don't know if we talked about it on the show, the Firefox phone.
Right.
That's in Spain, right?
Right.
And try these ways that reduce the handset cost have a huge impact then on increasing the connected population.
That's, yeah, that is the way people are getting computing, basically, in many areas. Yeah. Apple has lost its, well, at least for the time being, in the e-book case. A judgment came down this morning. Remember, most of the publishers settled. I'm curious what you think about this, Jeff Jarvis. Most of the publishers settled out of court, but Apple said no and fought it in court. The publishers were – I got to get this right now. Who is suing whom?
It's complicated. That's the problem. Is I
was hoping you guys would explain.
You know, part of the reason is I don't like to follow court stuff because even this, it sounds so final. Apple's going to appeal. They said we didn't do anything wrong. There will be a whole another trial on damages. So really nothing, so little has been decided. And yet it sounds like the decision has been made. So the judge ruled that Apple conspired with the five major publishers to raise book prices. Remember, when Apple came into the market with iBooks, the standard process was Amazon would set the price for a book. They'd say, no, you know, on bestsellers, remember Amazon.com, $9.99 bestsellers, right? And the publishers didn't much like that because they wanted to set the price themselves. Apple brought in this agency model. Well, Apple said, you set the price, we'll take 30% or whatever. I don't know what the cut is, but,
And thus they got the publishers in.
And they got the publishers in. I'm not sure why that's wrong. It seems like it was
right. There's various arguments about this, and one is that the publishers would say this is better for publishers and better for authors and so on and so forth. But I also read an article last week that Amazon, now that it basically has the lock on the market, and Barnes & Noble is teetering near death. The head just left. God knows what's going to happen there. So Amazon's getting hegemony in the book business. And
yeah, that's what Apple was fighting here.
Prices, and it's raising prices.
Yeah.
So the irony here is that Amazon is going ahead and raising prices anyway. And so, I don't know.
Apple says, when we introduced the iBook store in 2010, we gave customers more choice, injecting much-needed innovation and competition into the market, breaking Amazon's monopolistic grip on the publishing industry. We've done nothing wrong. We will appeal the judge's decision. I actually, on the one hand, you know, as a consumer, oh, $9.99, that's great. I'm going to get this book, you know, for much less than it would cost me in a bookstore. But that's, kind of, to me, classic dumping, where you set an arbitrarily low low-cost price until you own the market. And well, courts have historically punished people for that.
Right. On the other hand, you could argue that books have been overpriced, the antiquated distribution chain. Look what's happened with Kindle singles and such. And that Amazon, that there's a hell of a lot more books right now than there ever have been. Because Amazon came in and created the structure. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the costs are certainly lower, right? I mean, there's no shipping. There's no printing fees.
No, these aren't e-books. These are real books. These are physical.
That's actually a minor, in terms of the e-book part, that's a fairly minor part of the cost, as a truth.
You got to hire people to hawk the books. I mean, I have friends that go around and do this, right? You got to hire people to go around and say, buy this book. Or to the bookstore.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
You know, there's a whole ecosystem around that, right?
Which oh yeah,
is costly.
So the publishers, of course, wanted Apple to break this, you know, $9.99 forced pricing. So that's the conspiracy. They all settled out of court. Apple continued to defend. And one of the things Apple did that might have gotten them into trouble, they also said to the publishers, oh, and you can't charge less at any other bookstore than you're charging on our bookstore.
Mm.
And I think that was probably something the publishers wanted, but that allowed them to go to Amazon and said, hey, I am sorry. I do not wish to break our trust relationship here, but I got to charge $12.99 because Apple is insisting upon that. Apple
and
played
that
a,
is price fixing, yeah.
Yeah. That's probably why they're getting in trouble. Apple played, this is what the judge wrote, Apple played a central role in facilitating and executing that conspiracy. They seized the moment and brilliantly played its hand through the vehicle of the Apple agency agreements. The prices in the nascent ebook industry shifted upward, in some cases 50% or more for an individual title.
Stay on this for a second with Barnes & Noble. Barnes & Noble CEO this week, as I said, quit. They're basically quitting the tablet business and just going to do the reader business because their tablets weren't competitive and they were too restrained and limited. So let's imagine that Barnes & Noble folds. God forbid, but it ain't looking good. Huge amount of retail space, unnecessary, charging higher prices to consumers than they can get even from BN.com. What if Barnes & Noble physical bookstores disappear? The number of independent bookstores is de minimis in this country now. What happens to the whole notion of the market for books? Right? It's the
well, biggest disruption. We're going e-book anyway. Aren't we just eliminating physical media anyway?
Yeah, well, I guess it's not so revolutionary. There are no record stores. There are no video stores.
Welcome to the 21st century.
Yeah.
I like books. I will still buy books, and I think there'll be a premium market for physical books.
Mm-hmm. Used bookstores will still be around, right?
Yeah.
They just probably won't carry as many obscure new books.
The idea of a library changes dramatically.
Yeah. My wife rents on her Nexus 7 all the time.
Right.
She just goes onto the library site. She's digital thing. It goes through Amazon, and she gets it for 7 days or whatever it is. And she's a fast reader, so that works for her. But, she does that all the time. So I think people are going to trend more towards doing this, and libraries included.
So we'll see what happens. Now, so part of this lawsuit, publishers and ebook stores will have to end the agency pricing model for 2 years. So if this appeal fails, and this could take a long time, but if this appeal fails, then all of a sudden we go back to $9.99? No, because there's nothing in the agreement about what the price should be. Amazon's to say, yeah, we're going to charge $29.99 now, and you take it or leave it. And I think that this is exactly what you don't want. I don't know. I think competition is good. I don't, mm-hmm. but I don't pretend to understand it. And you make a good point, which is there isn't much. Electronic books don't have there's a considerable number of costs that are out of that.
Right.
I mean, for 99 cents for your Gutenberg the Geek, you made some money.
Exactly. And by the way, a small two announcements. The first is that as of since the last show, Gutenberg the Geek in translation is now available in German
for 99 cents.
Nice.
Gutenberg now $2.99. Gutenberg. Oh. They set the price. I didn't. Gutenberg der Nerd.
No. There's no geek in German. It's nerd.
They didn't want to do geek. Don't you understand? Verstehen Sie alliteration?
Gutenberg Geek. They don't have a word geek?
Gutenberg der Nerd.
Der Nerd.
But it's a nice, assonance with the
I like
sound.
It. Yeah, er.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
Gutenberg der Nerd.
And then it's also going to be, I've got to go record this, it's also going to be an Audible single.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Very nice, Jeff. Good for you.
Are you cool? Going to read it?
Yeah, I'm going to read it.
Awesome.
It's also separately been translated into Chinese and Italian. That's happening now.
Very good.
Yeah.
Congratulations. I wonder what they'll call it in Chinese or Italian. Gutenberg. I don't know. That's terrible. I'm sorry.
It's very strange when your book gets translated and your name is on a thing that you are unable to read. When they translated the Life Hacker book into Japanese, I was like, you know what? This book could be insulting your mother on the cover, and I have no idea.
No idea. That's why you don't get Chinese tattoos. I'm just saying.
Yep.
I remember seeing my first book in Chinese. It was very odd. Our show brought to you today by 99 Designs, the world's largest online graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects you with more than 200,000 talented graphic designers all over the world. And it's kind of a marketplace in the sense that it's a competition. You put out on 99 Designs your contest. What I need. I need a t-shirt design. That's what we've done with it. I need digital marketing collateral. I need a landing page or a Facebook cover. I need print marketing collateral. I need a flyer or a menu. I need an app design. And you go there. Designers then compete for the buy. They say, okay, how about this? How about this? You can work back and forth with them. Then pick the winning designer. And, man, this is quite successful. Right as of today, there are 236,800 designers submitting ideas on 99 Designs. There are 1,876 open contests out of a 250,000 almost that they've done to date. Total payouts last month to designers, $1.7 million. Total payouts overall, $56 million. 99 Designs is super cool. If you, if you're a geek and you know how to code, you know how to design websites, you know how to do all that, but you don't have that visual sense, go to 99designs.com. Get a designer to help you out. World-class customer support 24/7, phone, email, and chat. Complimentary design consultations with the San Francisco design team for your branding needs. Of course, there's our t-shirt. Isn't that beautiful? Of course, a 100% money-back guarantee. And right now, when you go to 99designs.com/twig, you're going to get a $99 power pack of services absolutely free. A power pack gives you more designer time and attention. 99 Designs will bold, highlight, and feature your design project in their marketplace. That means you'll get more than twice as many designs. You can either visit 99designs.com/twig or call 800-513-1678. That's a number just for Twit listeners. 800-513-1678. Tell them what you need. Receive dozens of design ideas. Pick your favorite. And then start looking good. 99designs.com/twig. Thank them for their support of This Week in Google. Melody McFessel.
This is a great piece.
I never heard of her.
It was a fluff piece, I'll admit it. And I've never heard of her either. And in fact, she must have asked not to be photographed, like, straight on, because all the photos of her are either sort of side or they're a little blurry. But this is a great piece in Wired about Melody McFessel, who's in charge of Google's internal engineering tools.
So cool.
Yeah, great, great piece about how she leads the team that builds the tools that Google engineers use. So nothing that's consumer-facing or user-facing. The plugins, the IDEs, the coding, the testing tools, the push architecture that they use. And in fact, Wired couldn't write a whole lot about what these tools
actually
are.
Couldn't even use the names of the tools, which amazed me.
Yeah, they couldn't use the name. Well, because this is Google's business value, right? Like, this is part of the secret sauce that makes Google run the way that it does.
I understand that because we have internal tools that really are our secret sauce. That we, that's some of the value of the company.
They probably have silly names.
They're all named after Jetsons characters.
Right.
That's a good.
We got Rosie, Elroy. What is some of the, Jane? They're all acronyms. They're all retronyms. We come up with a name and then we have to come up with an acronym. What is Rosie? It was the first one. It was kind of a wiki that's the repository of. I can't remember. Do you remember, Chad?
Get an engineer in here.
And only the engineers know. Anyway, so what's cool about this is, I guess, that she's a woman, right? She's a very important part. She says, if these systems don't work, then Google doesn't work. There would be no Kirk without Scotty.
Love that.
She's Scotty.
Yeah, she's Scotty. Exactly.
Go ahead, Gina.
No, I was going to say the part of that story kind of spoke to me in the first couple of graphs that she said. Yes. That she, she's been working in startups and technology for a long time, and that she had two separate wardrobes. She had her work wardrobe and then her at home regular life wardrobe. And her at work wardrobe was jeans and t-shirts and hoodies, because she kind of like made herself into like one of the guys because she was surrounded by male engineers all day. And then she'd go home and she'd put on skirts and dresses and things that she kind of liked to wear in her own life. And that she had gotten to this point in her career where she's like, I'm just going to be myself everywhere that I am. Good. And that that entailed her wearing dresses to work.
Good.
Because that's what she likes to wear.
Yeah.
And she kind of consciously kind of had to made that decision, which was so interesting to me. But yeah, it's a good piece. And I really like that. There's another part of the piece where it said a friend of her, a close friend of hers and colleague at Google said, you know, that she doesn't feel passionately about getting other women into the place that she is. She just knows that she deserves to be in that place. Which I really liked. But I guess she kind of came in and looked at the developer tools and the internal engineering tools, and her edict to the team was, we have to build these as if they were a consumer-facing product. We have to make them fun to use, good-looking, easy to use, because if engineers are happy and they have tools that they like to use, then they're more productive. And I just think that's so important. I've worked at so many startups. At Gawker, the CMS was a nightmare. I've worked even on ThinkUp. You know, we have a couple of our internal tools, and it's so easy to just build something that just, you know, just far enough for it to work, right. And it's kind of ugly, yeah. And you ask your people to just do this little workaround to do this, that, and the other thing. But if you take the time to make really good products, internal products, I think that sets up a tone, you know, like people enjoy using tools that are beautiful and easy to use. So I would imagine too
that there's a little tool macho that internally, we don't make this too easy, because if we have to make it too easy, you're an idiot, right? There's a test there.
Yeah, I wonder. I bet. I really like that. Apparently, Google has a system. All their tools, all their internal engineering tools, the code is available, open insofar within the company that it's available, available by this system, a web-based system, whose own source code is also available through this system. So it's this like recursive openness. So anybody can inspect the code and contribute to the code. But man, I don't often feel this way, but I read this piece and I was like, I really want to work at Google.
I know.
I just want to see this stuff.
They celebrate code. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So our tools, Patrick Delahanty, who's doing a lot of the coding for it. By the way, we finally got an in-house programmer, Patrick, because we realized exactly what you said. The internal tools are so important to our workflow. And as we grow and make more shows, we want to make sure that we can do it efficiently. So Rosie was the first. That was the repository of standardized informational explication. I think I had another acronym for it, but that
tells me a lot about what that does.
It's a wiki.
Okay.
Jane, what does Jane do? Jane is just another number enhancer. I don't know what Jane does. Astro, which is our ticket system, is a system to restore order. That makes sense, right? Astro. And then the most recent one is Elroy. Have we decided what Elroy does?
Pretty positive we came up with one.
We had a contest.
Yeah.
I came up with the retronym.
You got $50
but
internally.
I don't see any. Where's my $50?
Well, I don't know.
Which is really strange, because it'd be like taking out my wallet, taking out $50 and giving it to myself. But that's okay. Winning's winning.
I think there's tax implications, Leo. I want to see you name some tool this crazy thing.
This crazy thing. What does this crazy thing do?
As in Jane, stop this crazy thing.
Stop this crazy thing. Oh, the conveyor belt.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's next on the list.
Mr. What was the boss's name? Mr.
Elroy's. Yeah, Mr. Spacely. We don't have a Spacely yet.
Ooh, that'd be a tough one.
Elroy is a great name.
Elroy is. That's the most important tool. It's replacing MTIG. Right.
I remember what MTIG stood for.
What's MTIG stand for?
Multi Transcode Internet Go.
Elroy has to be in code.
That's the workflow where you put in a show and it comes out on YouTube all the other places.
Yeah, exactly.
Encoding. I came up with a name, but I can't remember what it is. Easily lose royalties over at YouTube.
Nice.
That's actually the name. I believe that. I think we have a winner. QWERTY Anonymous, I owe you $50. This tool lets us easily lose royalties over you at YouTube.
Accurate and memorable.
Yeah.
That might be a good show title.
Anyway, you know, it's a sad thing that we have to write articles about. Look, here's an important woman in engineering.
Yes.
I wish we didn't, but I'm glad Cade Metz did write this article. And I'm
the
glad Melody McFess is doing it.
Indiegogo was at Guardian Activate, where I presided only yesterday, and she said she had a what was it? No, it wasn't her. It was the head of the Nike. I forget who it was now. Somebody had that said that Whereas I think Indiegogo and companies like that have support 40-some% women ventures. VCs support only 3% of VCs companies have women executives. VC-supported companies.
Yeah.
I don't know what the source for that was, but it was just shocking.
I don't understand it.
Yep. And in my limited experience with VCs, you can tell pretty much from the get-go whether or not they're interested in funding a woman-founded company, you know? It's, it's interesting. It's interesting. It's actually a really good filter for me.
Yeah.
but anyway.
You saw the hysterical cartoon video of the VC process that somebody made. Oh, I wish I could.
Oh, no.
Oh, it was hysterical.
Oh,
if I could just find it. Why don't I bookmark this? I wish there was some way I could keep track of this.
Is there a place you can save it?
I wish there was somewhere...
Seek it somehow. Send it to me. I don't
know. Track of it. I'm
Maybe
sure.
Do
actually,
on the
there
internet.
Is. It's called the chat room. I'm looking at them right now.
Okay,
it's called
guys, earn your
it's
keep.
The chat room. You know what I'm talking about? It was
make,
a cartoon.
There you go. There you go, Link.
I wonder if that's it, though. There was a cartoon. Yeah.
You're like our Googling minions. I imagine you all as little yellow.
Yeah,
guys.
This is it. Wow. You win again. This is a little that. Sorry about the explosion. This is what it would have looked like had Nikola Tesla had to go to venture capital and pitch them.
Oh, I've seen this. This is good.
If it was only play, and of course, we need a name for the internet. There you go.
Oh,
thanks for coming in, Nick. My partners are really excited.
Hi, Nick.
Can't wait to see what you got.
Thanks for having.
You're not. Oops. Oh, you're watching me. I thought that was you. Oh, I'm so sorry. Start over. Do over. I thought it was him.
Thanks for coming in, Nick. My partners are really excited.
Hi, Nick.
Can't wait to see what you got.
Thanks for having me. You're not going to show a deck, are you?
Well, I would like to see a deck.
I will begin by showing you my inventions for transmitting electricity wirelessly.
Sounds great.
Hey, do you mind if Josh sits in?
Sure. Who's Josh?
Nice to meet you.
Josh is an EIR. He's thinking of starting a company in your space.
That does not sound great.
Just leave out the parts you are not comfortable sharing.
Or we can reschedule.
Since it took a while to schedule...
Fantastic.
Before you proceed, can you tell us a bit about the market?
My inventions allow the wireless transfer of energy to power any device.
So this is a wireless play or an energy play?
Technically, it would be both.
Hard to do two things at once.
The inventions send energy wirelessly to any device. Even mobile devices.
So this is a mobile play.
If this guy thinks he can go after three markets at once, he's crazy.
Maybe not three markets, but three big intersecting opportunities.
Nick, I think you're sounding a bit defensive. If you had to pick one market, which one would you pick?
Energy is the simplest way to think about it.
Energy is not as hot as it used to be.
You can always pivot back to energy if it gets hot again.
Maybe you can keep things simple. What about some kind of tie-in to Facebook? Josh?
Totally. Or a Kickstarter campaign, maybe.
Oh, did you do a Kickstarter?
No, I did not think a Kickstarter was the right avenue for this business, given the product.
The product is supposed to be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see it on Kickstarter.
Sounds like you might be a bit ahead of the market.
I have licenses for the technology with Samsung, Apple, and Intel.
Intel is in trouble.
I wonder how Apple stock did today.
The main point is our business model is to license to these kinds of companies.
It's Apple's funny because it's true. Yeah. That's what's sad about it.
It's amazing how spot on this is.
Apparently the Fed might do something with interest rates.
Anyway, we'll stop. But go watch it. It's on YouTube. Just search for Nikola Tesla. Pitching Silicon Valley VCs.
It's just so crazy. This whole industry is made up of jerks with money.
Yeah. But, you know, what's new, right? It's always been that way.
Yeah.
Okay.
We have a few interesting things here, Leo. We have, you could go high market or low market. You could go with Google interns terrorizing neighbors, or you could go with Google live streaming from the Grand Mosque in Mecca.
Wow, there is a broad gulf. Let's start with the terrorizing interns, and then we'll go to Mecca.
It is Ramadan. It is.
I don't know if that's related, but go ahead. Terrorizing interns.
Well, just New York Magazine has a story that neighbors complained they started a Facebook group about all the interns. Evidently, there's a big apartment complex where the interns live. You can imagine what this is like.
You don't ever want to live next to...
We're rich, we're running the world.
Yeah.
You know, I'm waiting for what was the great
It's like a college dorm. It's basically you're living in a college dorm. You don't want to be. But
swimming pools, you know, what tennis I'm waiting courts. For,
these guys are the next masters of the universe, right?
Right. And they
there's
know
gonna,
it.
There's going to be that kind of there's going to be that kind of behavior. Yeah. Of course there is.
Yeah, well it was in college anyway. I lived in my 20s. I lived in Silicon Valley, an apartment. I worked in a radio station in San Jose. And it was really, this was when Atari was big, and it was really interesting to see the snotty attitude, by the way. If you worked for Atari, you were like king of the, at the time, king of the world. Yeah. And so snotty, so rude.
I argued in What Would Google Do that we should disaggregate the functions of college. And, you know, there's education and research, and there's socialization. The socialization is just Melrose Place.
Yeah.
You should just live in an apartment building like this, and you figure out how to get along with people.
Jeff and I are the parents of college kids. And we're paying, God, on untold amounts of money for this socialization thing.
Working well, too. Isn't it?
Oh, they're socialized. Oh, party.
I think my favorite line from this article is, at first I thought it was a summer camp, but then I noticed that the kids were too old, said Rochelle Fisher, 46-year-old resident of the
acting
of the building.
Old, just...
They dart out in the middle of the street. They jaywalk all the time. There's loud parties. I have to be very careful when I'm driving.
Can you imagine the people who lived next door to the Facebook house in the early days?
Oh, God. Oh. Talk about frat house.
Is that a true scene in the movie where they pull the chimney off the house because they're like making a zip line? If it's not true, it's true to the idea.
I thought that was based on an incident, but I don't know. That movie was so fraught.
I think it was. I seem to remember that. Yeah. wow.
Yeah, it's. I look forward to the future when all of our technology is not created by
teenage boys.
To put it frankly.
Yeah. Adolescent boys, let's put it that
way. Yes, I would like adults designing my social networks. Thank you very
much. We're too old and tired.
Well, the irony is the people that were at Atari and other places like that back then are now the ones complaining.
Right.
Right.
Me.
Because they're older. Yeah.
Get off of my lawn, you
curmudgeons. It's come.
Kids.
It's come full circle.
All right. And Ramadan, a live stream of Mecca for Ramadan.
This is important because it's a place that unless you're Islamic, you can't go.
Really?
This is Mecca. We ain't allowed to go to Mecca.
Interesting.
Unless one of you is Muslim and I don't know it.
Nope.
But we're allowed to watch the live stream.
But we watch the live stream. So yeah, this is kind of a big deal.
And Mecca is a where you go on pilgrimage.
Yes.
You hope at least once in your life.
Yes.
Let me see if I can pull up the live stream.
I've got it. Yeah. Well, you have to get
your internet
share.
So much, but I'm on an Apple MacBook.
Yeah.
That's why.
I'm on a Lenovo. Come on.
This is the new MacBook Air, and I really do think it has trouble.
Can you hear it?
I hear the muezzin.
Oh, there it is.
Wow. So I'm kind of amazed that they were allowed to stream this.
Yeah.
I am too.
Yeah.
Isn't it the same? Wouldn't it be the same restrictions?
One would think. Well, they've got to be Muslim, the camera operators and the technicians, I presume, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I would certainly
this is kind of amazing. This is an amazing bit of access to something really sacred.
Well, they're not inside, though, right?
No, but these are the pilgrims
I don't know
arrive.
What they're going to do. There's that amazing cycle of people that happens.
Right, they go around in the circle.
Yeah.
I always enjoyed the calls of the muezzin. When we were in Egypt, we went to a mosque and... stood next to the guy as he did his call. And it was just, their voices are gorgeous. Usually they're up in the minarets, they're in the towers, and you hear it loud on distorted loudspeakers.
Right.
It's not very good. But when you hear somebody singing right next to you, just beautiful. And he was actually reading, so the wall of the mosque had the Quran, the words of the Quran written on it. And he was reading it as he was singing it.
Mm.
So he was turning it. Mm. And singing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of cool.
I recorded it. Somewhere I have a recording of that. Google has, we talked about this on Security Now. I don't know who's the evil actor here. I think it's AdBlocks. They're paying AdBlocks Plus not to block their ads.
Yeah, AdBlocks does this as a policy, and I just think it's, and I've tweeted about this, and they come after with their PR, and I really kind of don't care. It's ransom. It's ridiculous.
So if you're running AdBlocks... on your computer, you're running it so that you don't see ads on web pages. Now, we could argue about whether that's a good thing or not. I mean, as an ad-supported medium, I feel like that's kind of cheating. I don't use an ad blocker. Even as you notice, when we pull up pages, we don't block the ads on the pages.
Right.
But just because I feel like that's the price you're paying for the content.
Exactly.
That's an argument, separate argument. I think it's completely reprehensible that the company that makes this product, AdBlock Plus, to block ads, is then going to advertisers saying, "Yeah, but for a small amount, we don't block you."
Well, it's the default setting, right? So they have an acceptable ads list, right, which is on by default, and so Google's being paid to be on that list, right? Users can turn that off.
To be on that list.
Google's paying to be on the acceptable ads list, which is there's this acceptable ad whitelist, which is on by default, right? Like the power of the default setting. That's powerful. And Google's paying to be on the list. So it's interesting because this is, Google's paying for the default setting to be that they're not blocked.
I don't blame them. If I were Google, I would too. By the way, they block ad block from the Play Store. You can't.
From the Play Store. Yeah. Huh.
So AdBlocks Plus, by the way, to be clear, this is not AdBlocks.
Yeah, they'll come after us. Their PR people will come after us after this.
I switched from AdBlock Plus back to AdBlock because of the Google ads that I didn't want to see. And it was more because I was upset with Google because they were hiding the ads, because they make it that really light yellow color, mm-hmm. that top block. And if you're not looking at it just right, you can't even see. That's not right either. It's deceptive, I think.
If it's an ad, it should be clear it's not in the search results.
That's right. And there was no way to fix that. And so I said, you know what? AdBlock Plus isn't taking care of this anymore. So I went back to AdBlock.
Aaron, let me go up here for a second here. What's the harm of seeing ads, number one? Number two, for those of us, who cover all these things, the ads often have content value that is of interest. I find things in ads that we talk about and that matter. Number three, this supports the like of your pal right next to you, Leo. You want to buy that soupy slurp before by at least looking at his ads and you listen to him in the podcast. I don't understand the ethical decision.
For me, it's more of a it's less that I don't like ads and more of a layout decision.
It's what ads do to crap up a page.
Exactly.
And so content, I have to say, content creators are responsible for this because, one of the reasons we do the ads the way we do them is we try to choose advertisers that are appropriate. I mean, we spend a lot of time thinking about how we do the ads and choosing the right advertisers. And I think it is the responsibility of the content creator not to have takeovers.
Right.
Where you go to a page and the whole page is taken over by an advertiser, it slows you down. It's unaesthetically, and it's unappealing. And I feel like content creators are somewhat to blame for this. And so I don't blame people who use AdBlock because that's a very good reason to use it, Aaron. On the other hand, I think it's really important for people to understand that when you're reading content on websites, like Salon, that content's paid for by ads. And it's good content. I think they have the right to display the ads, so I think blocking them is kind of cheating.
Yeah.
It's saying, I want to consume the content, but I don't want to see the ad. Well, that's cheating.
If I ran a site, I would block ad block users.
This is what AdBlocks Plus says. Sure. Whitelisting is free for all small websites and blogs. However, managing this list requires significant effort on our side. And this task cannot be completely taken over by volunteers, as it happens with common filter lists. This is why we are being paid by some larger properties that serve non-intrusive advertisements that want to participate in the Acceptable Ads Initiative. I think that, to me, says that AdBlocks Plus is playing both sides of the fence.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's blackmail.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. This Acceptable Ads Initiative... I mean, it seems like AdBlock Plus is in the position to be able to say, you know what, your ads are so onerous that they degrade the user experience of your site so much that they're just not good ads anymore, right?
Maybe we need something like that.
A slideshow or some clearly totally unnecessary, a takeover, a flyover, a thing that rolls down and starts playing sound without my permission, like that upsets me, right? Because I feel like that's a user experience that says to me this site does not care about my experience at all and just cares about serving crazy insane ads.
Well, and I never go back to that site, by the way.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. And wasn't that role though in the early days of advertising the web? That was the role where the browsers took it over, right? So pop-ups were killed by the browsers.
Pop-unders
haven't died yet.
No, I still live. Them.
Yeah. But pop-ups, pop-overs, were killed by the browsers. The browser manufacturers determined what was acceptable. You're right, Gene. There is a role for that, absolutely.
There is. And so I feel like there's an opportunity to say these are the things that are, you know, this is the good way to serve ads. These are the ads that improve the user experience, and these are the kind of ads that degrade the user experience. And it'd be really cool to see an organization. Maybe it can't be AdBlock Plus.
I think that's the issue. That's what they argue they're doing, and I think you're right, and I think that is decent. But they are in a definite conflict of interest, and it makes it look odd.
Yeah, I agree. I would love to see, I would totally install an extension that if I did a Google search or if I found a link on Twitter or whatever and I clicked on it and it popped up and said, hey, you know what? This site has a history of serving user hostile advertisements. Do you want to stay here or not?
Wow.
And I could say no. I mean, think about it. That's what Chrome does for sites that serve spam.
Right.
Right. Like, I feel like this is one way that we could make.
Ms. Developer, I think you could make that in a weekend.
Just don't then go to companies and say, and by the way, I could keep you off of that list if you gave me a little
That's
bit
the
of.
Key. It's channel conflict.
Right.
Well, it'd have to be like the webmaster guidelines thing. Like, hey, you know what? You'll get off this list if you show
Here's
us that you've changed your ways. I don't know. Kind of an idea, but I agree that this is weird, this whole pay for getting on the waitlist. I'm surprised that AdBlock didn't say, hey, put us back in the Play Store, we'll put you on the waitlist.
And Google wouldn't have done that, I'll bet.
That would have been looked
that
really
would be
bad
wrong.
That would have
so
looked
many
really,
ways.
Really bad for Google. Yeah. This already looks bad for Google. So, Jeff, whose PR people are going to come after us? Google's?
AdBlock. When I tweeted that I was surprised at this, they came kind of after me. And, oh, no, we have to talk to you. And I still said, I just don't like it. Mm-hmm. Sorry, it's challenging. You know, my students, entrepreneurial students, go through this almost universally. Are we a B2B company or a B2C company? And I say to them all the time, you cannot be both. You'll end up in conflict. You can't compete with your customers. If you're B2C, you serve them. They serve the end customers, and you make them happy. If you're B2B, if you're B2C, then you can't serve others competing with you. You pretty much have to be it. And it's classic channel conflict. And that's the problem for AdBlock. And I'm not saying that they're illegitimate in their argument. It does cost money to maintain the list. They need money for it. I'm not questioning.
Yeah, because it's a free service.
It.
I mean, it's not, the plugin is free.
But it's a conflict of interest.
Yeah, I think it is.
That's the issue for them.
We should say this is AdBlock Plus we're talking about. That's not the same thing as AdBlock. And it's at adblockplus.org. And I don't use it, so I don't know which is what the best is or whatever. Hey, a little props to Twitter from the EFF. They say Twitter shows the way forward with Do Not Track. Twitter will honor your browser's Do Not Track setting by treating as a Do Not Collect signal. When Do Not Track is enabled in the browser, they will not collect your browsing information to show targeted ads on Twitter.
It's a little disingenuous, too.
Yeah, because they have this new way of targeting advertisements.
right. So as they put it in, what the heck?
Well, I think this is the right thing to do. Look, if Twitter wants to monetize with targeted ads, that's fine. Do make sure that you give people a way to opt out. And that's fine. Google does that, sort of, right?
Maybe. Well, yeah, you can use incognito. You can use lots of things. But again, there, if I ran a site, because my argument
you'd block incognito's browsers.
Well, no, let me go to a more positive way. I have been what I argue now to media people. I just did talks like this in Europe where I say, damn it, you're not in the content business. We've had this discussion, right? You're in the relationship business, you're in the service business. And as a service, Google understands who I am, and so it can serve me with relevance and thus greater value. And we in media don't know how to do that. And God damn it, you got to get past that. You got to learn how to know people as individuals and serve them relevance. Well, the only way you're going to do that is if you collect data on them.
Right.
You know, and Google does that and gets value out of it because it knows where I am, and media companies should be doing the same thing. Well, now if you turn on the Do Not Track
setting.
Religion.
Then, it's not a setting, it's a religion.
In some cases it is. And then I think you threaten to greatly devalue where media ought to be going to get higher value to support the content you like.
Well, here's a question Steve Gibson poses, and Steve and I have this kind of debate as well. He's very much adamantly, he was mad at Firefox for changing the way, or was it Apache? Anyway, he was mad at somebody. Is it the case that ad companies say we need to be able to track, we need targeted ads, or we're just not going to raise the revenue, we get the results we need? Is that the case?
Do we actually need to target advertising?
Yes, because otherwise it's noise. Otherwise, it's extremely low value, and it's no end. Then you're in a volume game, and the volume game is that there's no end of competitors.
Targeting means you're going to get better in theory, not in practice, but in theory means you're going to get more apropos, better ads that are great of interest to you.
Yeah. Yes.
And I've never understood why that bothers people, but it does.
Well, because, and this is what I also say, because we messed it up royally in the media advertising technology businesses. This strange thing called a cookie was set in your machine and people were tracking you. And we enabled the Wall Street Journals of the world to demonize this and make it sound all spooky.
It isn't creepy. It's just saying, look, we want to know what your preferences are.
Right.
Well, by the way, we don't use that. The way we do it is we sell ads. And then we do periodically, in fact, we're about to do it, a survey of our viewers, of completely voluntary. We say, hey, if you would like to tell us something about yourself, and that information we can use with advertisers do want to know. Well, who am I reaching? Am I reaching 12-year-old girls? Yeah. Am I reaching 50-year-old men? What am I getting? So they do want to know that. And so we do this periodic survey every year or so. And we can then say, well, in general, this is who, you know, we reach.
Right. So you do that as a sampling. If you do that on an individual level,
it's not
level,
as effective, probably.
Which is what Google this medium you have to.
Right.
But what Google does here is, as Eric Schmidt said at Activate in Big Tent in New Delhi, this will be more valuable than the web in Google's hands, because in mobile we know who you are, we know something about you, and that has a lot of power. And that's where both the content side and the advertising side should both be going, I think. I strongly believe that. But if we demonize the cookie and demonize all this, then it causes a real problem. What's happening now in the UK, the EU, is every site you go to in the EU, the first time, you've got to constantly say, oh, yeah, it's okay. You got cookies. I know.
Right.
And it just becomes an irritant.
I'm starting to see that a lot on sites here in the States, too. All Things D does that. First time you visit allthingsd.com. Here's our tracking policy. Here's our cookie policy, just so you know. And actually, we've been debating whether to do that on our site, even though we don't use tracking cookies. We do have analytics. And so we've been debating whether to do that. I think we probably are going to do that.
Well, and here's the second half of this.
It's annoying.
This is a transaction we go through. I think that the way that companies should, they should see Amazon as the model for this. Because Amazon, you know what they're tracking. You know why they are. You know what they're giving as a result. And they give you the opportunity to see it and to fix it. That should be the standard for all of this. And it will only, every time I fix it on Amazon, I'm more valuable to Amazon. That's a transaction I go through. If it's a transparent transaction in which I feel I have some control, I think that works, and that's the way we ought to go. Let's remember, people, the transaction we do have no control over is the NSA.
Right.
And that's, if you want to get creeped out about your privacy, if you want to get scared and scream about your privacy, now is the time to scream bloody murder about it, because your government is tracking everybody in the world.
Although, I'm going to make the opposite argument. The NSA is doing that to protect us. Advertisers are doing it just to get money out of us. They're trying to protect us, Jeff.
Advertisers are doing it. Media properties are doing it to make money to support the media we get. A.
And the NSA is doing it to protect us from terrorism.
Oh, whoa. under the law, they can go after certain specifics. They can't listen to the entirety of net traffic. That's just not right, and it's not the damned American way, it's the Stasi way.
I kind of threw him a softball on that.
You did.
I mean, Leo's so what do I do? I had to play into it.
This is how you play cricket.
What's this thing I've heard people talk about called the Constitution? What is that? I don't understand that.
Yeah.
Would you explain that to me? Twitter has banned auto-following and bulk-following in new developer updates. Thank you, Twitter. That's
real... good for them, too. That's smart both ways, right?
It's smart in every way. It just makes it a better environment. So no more, presumably there were apps that actually did that. They have turned on pardon me, go ahead.
I was going to say apps, there's apps that are like
rogue
blatantly,
apps.
Trying to follow a bunch of people.
Rogue apps.
But then there are apps which are like seem good and nice, but what they'll do is when you sign up for them, they'll in the background have you automatically follow, so say the app's Twitter handle, by default, without letting you know, that kind of thing. So that Twitter's made it really clear that that's a reason to get banned.
Twitter has also, another great thing, enabled translation on tweets from high-profile users in Egypt. So if you're
I'm
English,
seeing translation all the time now. I'm
so cool.
Yeah, it is great because I get a lot of German tweets.
They're using. I don't know if they're using Google Translate, but they're using some sort of automated translation. Bing. They're using Bing.
Bing.
Oh, wow. I'm not a Twitter user, so you guys will have to explain this to me. So when you get the tweet in your feed, it shows up both the original language and the translated?
Or there's a translate button. There's also a translate button that lets you translate.
Interesting.
Isn't that neat?
Is there not a translate button on anything that's not in your native language?
On mine, pretty much. Yeah.
That's really? In what? On the web page?
I'm using the Twitter app.
In the Twitter app. Okay. Well, that makes sense. I don't follow non-English speakers typically, so I don't.
Yeah, me neither. I'm realizing I have to vary the people who I follow, as I don't see non-English
speakers. Well, I supposedly
should understand
the German ones, but I cheat a lot.
Did they get rid of the used to be? I guess there's no reason to have it, but it was fun. The global button where you'd see everything. They don't have that anymore. That's a long time ago. Back in 2007, there was a button on Twitter. You'd see everything everybody was posting. Don't have that anymore.
The fire hose. Yeah. I remember the fire hose.
The fire hose.
But then they turned it off, or they limited it some. They got rid of it finally.
Yeah, that's why Zap.net, they still have a fire hose.
It got to be like.
Because there's nobody posting. Do you use App.net? You said you don't use Twitter. Is that what you use?
snarkyapp.net.
I don't use Twitter. I mean, I post to Twitter, but I don't follow Twitter.
But do you use App.net? What do you use instead?
Google Plus. I use Facebook. Oh. Well, sometimes to follow what my family's doing. But I don't follow people on Twitter.
Right. An app. Yeah. So who cares? Right. Moving on.
That's cool. I wish they would implement that in. Why doesn't Google do this?
On web pages. You'll see when you go to a web page all the time. Yeah.
Well, why don't they do it on Google Plus? I mean, they're the king of translate, right? Or I consider them a king of translation. I mean, that should be like a standard feature. And you would think Facebook, with the number of users, would do that as well.
Actually, Google Plus did have a translate button on posts, and I think they took it off.
Oh.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, tool tip number of the week. But first, a word from Shutterstock.com. With over 26 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock is the place you've got to keep in your back pocket whenever you need images. It's the place to go for royalty-free images. And I tell you, you're going to love this because they have the best search engine ever. You can not only search for objects like balloons, you could search for pink balloons. They even have a really cool color wheel. You can narrow it down by category. You can use the color wheel to say, I only want balloons of a certain color. If you sign up for a free account, don't need a credit card, just sign up for a free account. Then you can use their Lightbox feature to take some of the search results and put them into a Lightbox, share with others, or just keep track for inspirational purposes. Whether it's for your website, a publication, an advertisement, a video, or any other type of project, you will find the perfect image or video for your next creative project from 26 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, and 10,000 new images every single day, so you're always going to find something new. I want you to try Shutterstock. They have some interesting pricing plans. You can get images on demand, but you can also do, and this is what I do, the 25-image-a-day subscription, which is really great. And right now, you can take 30% off. Oh, look, red for Valentine's Day. 30% off new accounts when you use our offer code TWIG7, TWIG and the number 7. So this is a really good time to take advantage of that subscription. Save a lot of money. Shutterstock.com. Set up an account. You don't need a credit card. Play with Shutterstock. Play with the search tool. And once you decide to purchase, use our offer code and you will save 30% on any package. Shutterstock.com, 30% off TWIG7 is the offer code. Gina Trapani, your tip of the week, my dear.
Tip of the week. If you have not seen Facebook's graph search yet, you probably will this week. Facebook is rolling out to hundreds of millions of users this week. I think it's starting Monday, actually. If you haven't tried it out, graph search, it's pretty cool. You can do things like, say, show me all the restaurants in New York City that my friends like, or kind of a fun search, photos of my friends before 1996.
that's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one. There's a lot of really actually cool searches you can do with graph Graph Search, I have to say. It's a pretty great function. So check it out. I know a lot of our listeners, watchers, viewers are not big Facebook users, but Graph Search is definitely, if you're interested in search, Graph Search is definitely worth a try. Of course, you have to have a pretty good social graph set up there on Facebook in order to get anything good. But give it a try.
Look at, these are all photos of my friends before 1980. This is so cool. I think you should just do a search of the graph search of the week. This is hysterical.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
That's pretty great.
Who is that? Oh my God, that's me. What is that I'm holding? Oh, never mind. That was 1974. So it was a different time.
That's right.
Different era.
I'm impressed. Many of your friends uploaded photos before Facebook existed.
I have a lot of old friends. You gotta understand, my friends are old.
They just sit in their basements going through their old photos because all we have are memories.
Here we are when we were freshmen in college.
And you had to actually scan that too.
Yeah. See that picture on the right? That's me and the pipe.
Whoa, Leo. I was like, it took me. I scanned the picture. You're a handsome devil. Look at you.
Well, yeah, if you like guys with pipes, I guess. Like 18-year-olds pretending to be sophisticated.
I'm completely out of the running, but it has nothing to do with you, Leo, but very handsome.
Can I tell you wouldn't want to have been our neighbor in those days? Holy cow. We had a water balloon catapult. This guy here in the top hat made it with surgical tubing that could fire from one end of the old campus to the other, about 300 yards. So,
that's pretty cool.
We'd put water balloons in it. We'd be at one end. We'd fire them like 10 seconds later. It would land on somebody, and they'd look around, and they wouldn't realize, yeah, we're way the hell over here. It was great fun. You would not want to be our neighbors. I truly understand.
Worse than the Google interns.
The devastation.
How bad could it be? They're at Google all the time coding. I mean, or they should be, right?
In theory.
Actually, it wasn't 300 yards. It was probably 150 yards. It was more than a football field.
Water balloons are heavy. It's not to get a good lift on a water balloon from a catapult. It's got to be a pretty powerful catapult.
We had double. This guy was an engineer. I tell you, double surgical tubing, a bucket. It took four people to shoot it because you have two people in front and two people to pull it back, and it pulled back like 15, 20 feet.
Was it more a slingshot or a catapult?
Yeah, it was a catapult.
Hybrid, okay.
Yeah, and you'd fire it, and that thing, anyway.
If only there was streaming web video.
Oh, man, it would have been amazing.
Memory. Amazing.
Then there's that time we put the dry ice in the fire extinguisher. Never mind. for another day. Your number of the week, Jeff Jarvis.
NDP Group says that in just 8 months, Chromebooks have snagged 20 to 25% of the under $300 market. Now, yes, straight line here, that's a shrinking market. PC shipments are predicted to go down 7.8% this year, but still.
That's interesting.
For something that people thought was just this crazy little thing, nobody's going to use it. I was in a store in London and I heard the Google sales guy pitching the woman on. She said, "You mean I don't have to buy any software? I don't do this, I don't do that." I think I've heard a lot of grandmas getting them from grandsons because nothing to install, grandma. School shipments like crazy. So it's really pretty impressive that this odd thing nobody thought was, who wants a browser in the machine, that it works.
I wonder how many notebooks there are in the under $300 laptop market, though.
Fair number now.
I think because the failure of netbooks. I guess $299.
Yeah, you can get $299, but they're they're pretty underpowered,
pretty junky.
But they
if that's your budget, get a Chromebook. I would agree with that, or maybe a tablet. Do you want to do a tool?
I can do a tip if you want me to do a tip.
Good. Okay. Anything you want to do?
Let's do a tip. So this is something I shared on Google Plus not too long ago, and this is something that you definitely want to check, make sure that you're willing to do something like this. I usually bring up the rooting things, root your phone and do something cool, right? So this is Wi-Fi tethering on your Android phone, and it's supported by most phones, but not all. And you don't have to be root for this one. This is actually a feature of a program called ES File Explorer, pretty popular file explorer that people have. And it's a little known feature, but you can actually go into your settings, which I'll do here. And
so this requires root.
It does not require root.
Does not require root.
It sometimes works better with root, but it does not require root. You can go into ES File Explorer, go into Tools, go into Net Manager, and you'll see there that there is, it brings up kind of your network settings. It says join a network or create a hotspot network. And this is the part that was new to me with their latest release, is this create a hotspot network, because a lot of times you can't do that on your phone. So this is why I say, you know, be careful with this. Make sure you're abiding by all of your agreements with your carriers and everything. But I can actually exit my current network right now, and I can hit create a hotspot network. And now I have a hotspot Wi-Fi tethering network created that I can join my laptop to get work done in the airport or for whatever reason. And it's a really nice little feature. And I was pleasantly surprised to see it actually work on my phone. I've had reports that it works on some phones. It doesn't work on other phones. Some phones you need to be rooted. Most of the time I've heard you do not need to be rooted. If it works on your phone, it works unrooted. So this is ES File Explorer. It's a tip. It's a little known feature in ES File Explorer. You can actually go in and name the network and create your own password if you want to, or it will automatically assign an SSID for you and a random password. So,
Aaron, can I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I have on my, and I have a Nexus 4, so it's a little more open that way, but I have Foxfi key, and I have something called Portable Wi-Fi Hotspot, and I have PDA Net.
Uh-huh.
And I am able to open up a hotspot. What I'm paranoid about is that I have an AT&T unlimited account, and that they'll send the NSA after me.
Right.
and it matters with Glass.
Sure.
How does the phone company know when you're using a hotspot, when you're tethering in a way like that?
They do have ways to track it. And I think if you were a super huge user, at least from what I've read online and the people I've talked to, you know, if you're on there all the time and you're watching Netflix from your laptop through your Wi-Fi tethered device that you aren't legally, or you haven't had, you don't have a contract to use Wi-Fi tethering on, eventually they will catch you. And usually what they do is they turn it off. They turn the spigot off.
Or they charge you.
Or they'll charge you on your bill.
Or they kill your unlimited plan.
Right.
I haven't heard of them or they'll kill your unlimited plan. Exactly. And what I haven't heard of them doing is shutting off service completely or anything like that. So that's why I say use it at your own risk.
On the rare occasion when you need to do it in kind of an emergency, or you're demonstrating Glass or something, are you going to get guillotined, do you think?
That's what I use it for. That's exactly what I use it for, is when there's no other way to get online and I need to show something to somebody, or I need to get that email sent, right? I go ahead and turn this on, get my email sent to whatever I need to do, and then I usually just go back in and turn it off.
That's kind of de minimis.
I haven't heard of anyone having any problems with that. So, like I say, use it at your own risk. Really, really simple tool. And if it works for you, great. If it doesn't, then there are other tools, like you said, Jeff, that you use. So,
but that ES File Explorer is a good thing to have anyway.
It's a good thing to have anyway.
I like that.
It's a great – they just updated the interface for it, so it looks really, really nice. And lots of options, lots of settings. You can go in, and if you do have root, it's a great utility to have, because then you can go in and change the settings on your phone, browse things. It has a built-in ability to connect to network devices over FTP or SMB. So if you've got a network share and you want to connect to it to transfer files, it's a great way to do that. So a lot of really cool features. So and that was one that just popped up recently.
I have to go see a man about a phone or a tablet or something.
Right, or something.
Oh, that's we don't know. So and then you have to come home and email us about it.
Privately, right?
I would, but it would be wrong. I don't know.
No, it wouldn't be wrong.
Okay, you're a journalism professor. I'm going to go with whatever journalism professor.
Sheet of the world, you're telling your colleagues so that we can plan for the next show.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay, good.
We have to do a lot of deep thinking. This amazing thing you're going to
say. Kara Swisher was so adamant that it's not a phone that I can only think, what else does Motorola make? They make the tablets.
Right.
It's got to be a tablet, right? I don't know.
I got to prepare for All About Android, Leo. I got to know.
I don't know. I'll let you know. But you, at home, you're just going to have to wait till whenever. Hey, I do thank you so much for being here. And I thank you, Aaron Newcomb, for coming by. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
NetApp.
It's always fun.
.com.
Always great, Aaron.
And thanks to NetApp for letting me come.
NetApp. What is NetApp?
Very nice. So NetApp does enterprise storage.
Oh.
Enterprise storage vendor. And they do a lot of really cool things. So if you work for a large enterprise, you need some storage, go check out NetApp. Do some really great things. And they're very, very flexible. It's one of the top It's always one of the top places to work in every country where they're at. I think in the U.S. right now, they're number six on the list of best places to work.
And do you code? So, what do you do for them?
I do marketing for specific solutions.
Okay.
Ironically enough, Oracle solutions. So that worked out pretty well.
Well, and yeah, you have to be technical to do marketing in these companies.
Yes,
you cannot just be some guy saying, yeah, you know, you really need this thing because it's great.
Right. That doesn't work.
Does not work.
No.
Thank you, Gina Trapani, smarterware.com. And of course, thinkup.com, to do text.com, TXT, and enter beta, alpha numeric.
In beta.
In alpha beta. In beta on 5x5.tv.
Thank you very much. Great show today.
Great to have you. Thank you, Jeff Jarvis. I'm glad you made it.
I'm delighted I made it. I was.
What time zone do you think you're in right now?
Oh, God knows.
Well, go take a nap.
I will.
All right. Thank you, Jeff.
After I have some wine.
His book, of course, Public Parts, available at bookstores. Gutenberg der Nerd, now available
Gutenberg
in Germany.
Gutenberg der Nerd.
Der Nerd.
Deutsch.
Yeah. of course, his blog is buzzmachine.com, a must read. But everybody on this show spends a lot of time on Google+. You can follow us there. We do this show 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time on Wednesdays on twit.tv. That's 2100 UTC. Please watch live. We love it if you do. But if you can't, on-demand audio and video will be provided at requests. Just go to twit.tv/twig or wherever finer podcasts are aggregated. I'm Leo Laporte. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time. Thanks.